You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 3 hours. We've got our legal team here between 12 and 1. 1 to 2, we've got Forever Friends coming in. And then between 2 and 3, we've got Choice Tunes. And you know what that's all about? We'll hear about someone's life and their music. But first of all, I'd like to welcome Grant Hutchison, the big chief down at Hutchison Legal, and Robert Guzman. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Alan. It's I'm not the big chief, you know. I'm just the humble servant.
Yeah, all right. Whatever you think.
I can't really follow on that.
He's a hard man to follow with that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Now, we sent you away with a question, and we've got a few questions in today, but the first one was, what can you tell a lawyer, and then what can he be forced to, or is he legally obliged to pass on? If someone's committed a major crime and comes to you and says, I murdered Joe Blow, but it's your job to get me off, where do you stand?
All right, so thanks for those questions. So I'll give within my capacity and just my experience, which I have had some criminal defence experience. And so what basically the things that I would always err in the side of caution is I tell the client, that's never tell me that you're guilty or not guilty. All I want to know is just factually what happened.
Right.
So I can just present to the court or to the prosecution, which would be the state, and just say, look, these are the facts and all I want to know is the evidence. So I'll just tell straight up the client, I'll just say, I don't care, or I don't want to know about whether you did it. In fact, I would probably just say, just give me the facts, and that's
what. What if I inadvertently turned around and said, oh yeah, but I did it?
Well, in that state, I would be very prudent, and I would let the client know that I would be apprehensive of taking their case, and so it would be my advice for them just probably take someone else. But because my duty is to the court, so that's one of my paramount duties is I always have to be transparent with the court. So I can't just like go, okay, I get all this information and the client tells me they're guilty and then I have to, you know, be dodgy. I can't really do that. So it would just be, it would be a precarious line to walk, one that I would be uncomfortable with. And so for the sake of making an objective and sort of the best type of case for the client would be just one in the outset where you're not putting the lawyer in that particular bind. So it's just for the sake of due diligence, actually just sake of fair procedure. It's best that a client goes with someone in that.
So if the client, so you're saying your first duty to the court, not to the client who's paying you.
It's there are multiple paramount duties, but the one of the things that we're always told solicitors getting into practicing, that it's basically we do have to be transparent to the court. And that's one of the things. It makes sense because really what we're trying to do is give an objective light and not attach agenda and too much sort of like try to hide information. So the judge or the magistrate needs to be impartial, and in order for them to be impartial about how they see a client, they need to know what are the facts on both sides of the matter. So if you're trying to be surreptitious and hide sort of information, then how is a judge meant to be informed about everything in a holistic sense, which makes sense.
Grant, you've been in business for some time. Have you ever had this situation arise?
Of course. And look, to start with, what can you tell your solicitor? You can say any, you know, what you can do, you can say anything. Lawyers normally charge by time. So
cut it back.
You want to talk. We would encourage people to stick to what's relevant. Because we're not their psychologist, we're not their, you know, there's a lot of things we're not. You can get a better psychologist for a cheaper price than using your lawyer for that. So, and I think Robert has given you the correct technical answer to the question. Yep. I would say that I know on my, you can never mislead the court. You don't. Yep. It's not that you have to volunteer information, but if ever you hear your client say something to the court that is contrary to something that they've told you in instructions, at that stage you ask for an adjournment. Where you speak to the client and explain to them, I can't be party to misleading the court. So if you want to hold that position, and that's contrary to what you've instructed me and you've established previously, then we'll just seek an adjournment from the court while you get a new lawyer.
Fair enough.
So then, and don't tell the lawyer, you know.
Don't tell the new lawyer.
Well, sorry, you can't say one thing and let us be party to a conspiracy to conceal or trick the court into something. Now, other lawyers may have a different position. Personally, I wouldn't encourage people to tell me they're guilty because that's a determination by the court.
Yep.
If they want to tell me the story that's gone on, often the police have got them on tape and everything already, so there's nothing to be... And I would just say to them at that stage, look, this is going to be... if you want to plead guilty to the charge, because you've already confessed everything on the tape that I've just listened to, you know, we can try to dispute things, but there have been cases I've said, look, I'm not comfortable taking your case unless you're pleading guilty. Mm. If you want somebody to help you do a no-guilty plea when you've clearly done it, go and find another lawyer. There's heaps of lawyers. Go and find another one. We're allowed to as lawyers. Solicitors can say that. Barristers can't.
Okay. All right, we've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more because we do have a question that we've promised the listener to answer straight away. So we'll discuss that straight after this break.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, we do encourage people to rock up with any questions. As we say on a number of occasions, we can't talk about a case because it takes a lot longer than the few minutes that we've got, but if you any questions of law, if you want to today, 59-615-991. Greg's out there. Greg will bring them into us, or if not, during the next month. Hutchinson Legal will be back in September then, won't it? The second Wednesday in September. So info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. But, Grant, we've had a listener ring in and we like to answer their questions. This person is... over the period of his lifetime has created some assets like a house, some nice cars and all that sort of stuff. And in later life, he's now met a lady who unfortunately doesn't have any assets. I think that we'll take that. That's about as far as we'll go with that. So obviously it's still fairly new, but it's a romantic relationship. But he would like to protect his own assets, which is pretty fair. He's bringing it all into the relationship. Yep. First of all, is a prenup the way to go? Mm. Secondly, what should be in that prenup? Like how specific they have to be. And thirdly, could you give him a rough idea of what's the cost of drawing up a prenup?
Thanks for the question. And certainly you start with the reiterating the general disclaimer we have in this, and that is that because there'd be a heap of other questions you'd want to ask someone before you'd proffer genuine advice to an individual. But in general terms, it's no longer called a prenup. It's called a binding financial agreement. And a binding, you don't have to be married to have a binding financial agreement. Anybody can enter into a binding financial agreement who's in a relationship. So I suppose the first question, you know, has it got to that point where it's effectively a de facto? And if so, what are the obligations that might come as a result of that? Or is it still more or less a developing or unfolding relationship and you don't know where it's going at this stage? It sounds like it's moving along. Let's assume that in a couple of years' time, it's clearly they've been in a relationship and they're still there. Yeah. So the best thing, so you can do this before marriage, during marriage, after marriage, binding financial agreements, and that's a contract that's binding between. There are some asset protection things that he could do to try to protect assets. Family courts, if there's a child involved or it's been more than 2 years, there's certain rights that will always...
But if it's the child is not of that person...
So that would be different. If it would need to be the child of the person or a child who he became the father to. So, as I say, it becomes quite complex. But a binding financial agreement deals with all of these things. So a binding financial agreement, and the question is what goes in there?
Yep.
Well, what's necessary is that both sides receive independent legal advice. So you need two sets of lawyers, not one.
Right.
So it's no point him coming up with an agreement that stipulates what he wants and he goes home and puts it on the table and says, sign this, or, it's hit the road.
Yep.
Because she needs to also get independent legal advice. And so both lawyers would confirm that they've effectively given advice about this agreement. Mm-hmm. And I do remember a case where it may or may not be similar, but somebody comes with nothing and the other person, and in that agreement, we were acting for the female, not them, and the person wanted, he was quite rich and he said, doesn't matter what goes on, everything's mine. Everything's mine except something that you earn yourself. Everything else, and it's even if they had a child during the relationship, was still going to be all his.
Gee, that's a bit tough.
So effectively go back to the life you've started. If you're going to leave me, I know we wrote to the lawyers on the other side and just said, look, we find this unconscionable, and it's anyway, she wanted to get married, but we were not in a position to sign off on our side of those things. Normally the increase in the assets during the time that they're together, so what he already has, he might say, I protect that. But what the assets that develop during the time that they're together, it's reasonable to say that should be available. because there would be an increase in wealth.
I was just going to say, when you're saying that, though, does that mean that the house would need to be valued at today's value and therefore if it goes up $100,000 in the next 5 years or whatever, that person is entitled to half that? Or are we saying, no, that asset, it just remains his asset?
You would say if there was a mortgage that's being repaid, and so let's say
No mortgage.
Okay, so no mortgage. You could try to garrison that or try to protect that in some way. But look, if the relationship, if you don't have a binding financial agreement and the relationship falls into de facto or other rights that can come, you're in all sorts of, well, when I say all sorts of strife, there can be claims made in terms of what's fair and reasonable. And so those things should be, this is the right time to go and see a lawyer. You're looking at a cost of between $3,500 to $5,500 each person for a binding
So you're talking about $10,000 between the two of you, $10,000 to $11,000.
Well, between about $7,000 to $11,000 easily. I would have thought it's a good investment. Tell you, if you don't get this right, the pain and heartache later is huge. Mm. So it's called prenups in the US, and probably other places it's called a binding financial agreement here. But can I just say it's an investment? But this person, whoever advises, has to advise on basically, I know this sounds absurd, but the older you are, the less it should cost. Because if you go as a young person and you're wanting a binding financial agreement, the lawyer has to effectively advise you about all the contingencies that could happen and say what's fair and what do you want to do in these circumstances? Yep. Because it should reflect what's fair, having given consideration to all the things that are ahead in life. Yep. If you're about to be put on life support, there's not a lot left.
Don't look at me when you say that.
I haven't got a hoodle again.
Grant, can I just ask you another question? Pardon me, what happens if one person's got the facilities or the financial to be able to go to a lawyer and the other one says, well, I haven't got any money?
Oh, I think the person with resources can pay for the other person's legal fees. As long as it's done, they should give the person the money and they go and get a lawyer. It shouldn't be invoice me, Mr. Rich Guy, because otherwise it might just blur the line. So you'd give enough money, get a cost estimate. Look, there may be people that do it for less. All I know is that you want it to be binding at the end of the day and they've got to be properly advised. Look, as I say, it's worth doing properly because then you can set and forget. You just move on in life. Can I say, 10 or 15 years ago, our legislature or parliaments tried to bring in these binding financial agreements, and each time a judge would find an exception. Oh, it shouldn't apply in this case. And so it's really been, I think this is a third attempt, because there was a case of Black and Black that basically made it very difficult. Now it seems that if it's done properly by lawyers and it's signed off, then it is binding. Yeah. But everybody holds their breath when a new judge tries to think, oh, well, maybe it shouldn't apply in this case. So you want them properly advised, signed off by a lawyer for each, and then it's...
And I suppose the other issue too is that when there's a house involved, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, aren't you? And if half of that goes west because you've done it wrong, then it's going to cost you a lot of money, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it's somebody... If somebody is in a relationship, are they wanting to imperil or are they wanting to... put up for grabs their house? Probably not if it doesn't work out. And very sensible to think these things through, because you never know how a relationship will develop despite the best intentions of everybody. And intentions are not what makes for a good relationship. Sorry. All right. Do you want to talk about Valentine's
Day? No, we'll take another quick we'll take another quick break and then we'll be back with more.
Yeah. FM 99.1.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we have Robert and Grant here from Hutchison Legal talking about all things legal. Now, we did ask another question. We wanted to cover that one for that person, which we've now done. I think the guy's nearly had a heart attack, but anyway, we've found out what we had to find out. The other thing that we did, in fact, there were about three questions that we did send you over last time. And the other one, in a criminal case, like the police gather their evidence and therefore the prosecutor, whoever he is, gets all his evidence. How much of that does he share with the defence, or do you just have to find all your own information?
Yeah, thanks for the question. So basically,
when people say thanks for the question, you almost think, but I think he likes this.
Actually, that's a good point, because a lot of the times what happens is you'll get a preliminary brief and you're just basically given.
Well, what's the preliminary brief?
Good follow up. So, preliminary brief would be it's kind of like just a basic structure of what the prosecution have on the defense. So, have perhaps some of the major charges or some of the minor charges that are put against you, but they might not even have all the charges there. There might be some of the evidence that they have, some witness statements, some statements, but not all the evidence might be there.
What about where they've been interviewed by the police and it's taped? Do they give you a copy of that?
Yeah. So the record of interview is it might be mentioned there, or it might not be. It might be mentioned in. So what happened? Will the prosecution will have these are the allegations against the defence, and they'll say there's a record of interview, but we'll still have to seek that in the future. So that being what a preliminary brief is, because the full brief will have record of interview, all the evidence against you, all the charges. So that is incumbent on the prosecution to adduce at some stage.
How close to a case? Like, do you get plenty of notice or only a day or two beforehand?
No, so you would have, initially, you'd probably start off with a preliminary brief, and then when, say, that a person's been remanded, you would probably try to seek bail for that defence, for the defence to do, and you'd probably, if you get rejected that that bail application, then you'd seek for the negotiations with the police in the interim, seeking for the full scope of the brief. By the time the next court day would happen, which would be a first mention, you'd hope that you'd get all the information to run an actual matter.
But do you ever get the...
Alan, you're looking worried, can I tell you? Yeah. If ever you go in for an interview, don't you worry, because they always have... They have a tape deck that has three tapes going simultaneously, or three CDs, and they give you one, they keep one, and one is the master.
Right.
So the client normally walks in and says, here's my record of interview...
And then the lawyer
shudders. Am I really going to have to listen to you? Because helpful Harry's always shoot themselves in the foot. So when they're being helpful to the police, it never really helps you. Because the police know how to push you a certain way. Right. So that's why a no-comment interview can sometimes be advisable. But remember, the police are meant to be model litigants. They're not meant to try and ambush you. They're not meant to try and trick you. They're meant to, you're giving me a suspicious look. Police are meant to be model litigants. A bit like...
When you say model litigants, what does that mean?
Well, if you and I, if we're having a civil fight between two lawyers, there are rules that you have to comply with, but as long as you fit within the rules, you get away with it.
Right.
But you have to give discovery of there are certain things. But a model litigant, and so the Australian Taxation Office, if they're suing, most government, they have huge resources compared to little old, the poor person who's an individual. Yep. The police have huge resources.
Mm.
They're meant to, in order to even things up, they're meant to not be hiding things or playing games. They're meant to... Now I'm being suspicious of myself. But they're meant to be upfront. So a model litigant is meant to be a litigant, somebody in the court system who people could model their behaviour on.
Yep.
So not somebody who's playing fast and loose with the truth and other things. But yes, Robert's had some experience that makes him a little
bit more. I would just add, yes, that's kind of some of the ethical standards that are the undertones, or at least underpin most of society's behaviour, I would say. But just erring on the side of caution with this, just because the state has a lot of resources, and yes, they do go into that, they'll use the full spectrum of the resources to throw the proverbial book at you. But the problem is, because there's perhaps this, let's just say what absolute power corrupts absolutely type of a statement, basically what can happen is you just get an abusive process. And that's what the defense lawyer is there, is to keep that abusive process in check, because you can get, as I said, the book thrown at you, and literally they will put every charge they can find against a small act to the point where it's absolutely ridiculous. So that's the point of the defense lawyer, is to keep that process in check.
Robert, you've been involved in this. So yes. Do you ever get to the stage where you're either on the morning of the court, or when you're sitting in the court, you're hearing stuff that you've never had shared with you?
Yeah. So what you'd flag with the court at the time would be that not all the information is in front of you to make an actual assessment of what the instructions should be. So you just go with an adjournment, and that will be the first mention, and that's when you kind of going the first time you appear in court. As I said, you won't have, a lot of the times, you just won't have all the evidence in front of you. So it's just not prudent to go ahead with making any last minute sort of outcome on that date. Yep. So you would adjourn the matter, get all the relevant, and you'd call, it's called a summary case conference, and then you'd negotiate with the police about the particulars of what charges and what evidence is and what gets thrown out.
So once it's done, like, they can't then come back on the day and land other evidence on top of you. Like, once you've had your mention and you've had your conference, then the police or the prosecutor shouldn't just be landing stuff on top of you that you don't know about.
A lot of the times you won't have a full understanding of the scope of what's happening, because there might be multiple charges from different informants, or there might be multiple briefs attached to a single client. And the court might not know about them all, and it's your duty to find out, perhaps. So what you would do is you'd still seek for a bail application in the outset, because a person is always entitled to bail to an extent. And so you would still try to run a bail on the first date, just so that person gets out of jail and you're not wasting human life force in jail waiting for the police and you to negotiate about the particulars about evidence. And sometimes, when it's best if that person is in the community. And I note that might be precarious, because a lot of people are just like, oh, there's criminals out there, but it's more so it's about that a person gets integrated into society, and then they can sort of go about rehabilitating rather than just wasting away in jail with the hope that something happens in the future. So it's more about you really need to emphasize that it's a community integration in that holistic sense, where they get support for their drug behavior or for the men's behavior program, et cetera, et cetera. That's the whole point about preventing recidivists or that tendency from happening.
All right, I just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
To be all that
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back, and we've got Grant and Robert here. Robert, just briefly, we did ask you to do a little bit of research to see whether the road rage incidents over the past 2 or 3 years...
During the pandemic... Oh, it wasn't turned on. During the pandemic, has it had increase, or certainly has it gone up since the pandemic's finished?
Yeah. Thanks. So I would just follow up. It sounds like this question is just leading on, is there generally more anger in society? So I'll just give practical sort of life advice, and I don't know if I'm the authority to do that, but if you're going out on the roads, just sleep. Make sure you've slept well the night before and you eat well, and so you're not as frustrated, because that's what happens when you're tired and you're frustrated. You're more susceptible to being angry.
Well, it does seem too, though, that in the shops and that, people seem to be getting a lot more aggro since the pandemic, don't they?
Yeah, you know? Well, also, it's been people being cooped up at home for the last 2 to 3 years. So if you can just squeeze in some exercise, because that also helps to alleviate stress, I think that's just probably... Yeah.
Speak for yourself, Alan. I'm quite relaxed.
I know, yeah. I'm finally going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Now, we've got a question. We want you to take it away. So hopefully someone's got a pen and going to write it down.
Yeah.
We've had a question. I'll set the scene up a bit as it was set to me. Young couple marry like they do when they're young. They've had 2 children. Along the way, the father had a sexual relationship with someone else. The lady got pregnant. The father refused to acknowledge other than to tell her certain things. So the woman went away and she had the baby and the years went on. So, but the mother always told the daughter who the father was. She was honest. The father was on the birth certificate, which he probably didn't like, but he was on the birth certificate. So everything goes along and his wife eventually dies, which is really just a bit of a side issue, not to her, but it was. Then... So he doesn't remarry and he dies. So all of a sudden, it's time to read the will. And for some reason, this daughter who had never met her father decided, well, I'd like to meet my brothers and sisters. So she turns up before the reading of the will. Now, the person who's talked to us says, well, how do I prove that she is the daughter, because we just discussed this before, that you can't, nobody can make another person take a DNA test. So how do we prove that that's the daughter? Now, if the father had named the 2 children in the will, would she have been entitled to a share if it can be proved that she's the daughter? But in this case, he just left it to his children and didn't name the children. So obviously... that doesn't do anything. But if we also want to know, if he had have named the 2 children, where would that daughter stand? You know, is she entitled to a share, even though she's not mentioned? And I guess somehow he wants to know, how can we prove she's actually our daughter? He's not disputing that his father had another child. But what he's disputing is, how do I know that this lady who's walked into my life now is in fact that lady or that sister?
So, good question. That's a long, was that your short question or your long one?
No, that's it.
That's a big question.
So there's a bit in that, isn't it?
And you don't want it answered now, so no. We'll come back to you next month. Sounds like life. It's complex, it's involved, it's pretty meaty. So it's a good question. So thank you for that. And whoever thought of that question deserves an award.
Well, to be honest, I don't think they thought of it. I think they're in the middle of this situation.
Oh, they don't deserve an award. They deserve a pat on the back, you know, some encouragement, because it's a difficult one. So they're great questions.
Because I think you and I discussed it before, pardon me, about DNA, that only a judge can order a DNA. And I think you said that he's never going to order it for something that's not illegal, you know, not a case?
Well, let me come back with an answer. We don't want to answer it now, although we can take your answer.
No, I don't know. I think that's what we did say, that yeah. it's a judge is not going to... All right, Grant, you've got something else you'd like to mention.
I thought it was worth picking up in the Star this week. There's a story on in the opinion piece. Somebody from the Eastern Community Legal Centre, Anita, has written that according to their centre, the top three legal problems experienced in the Yarra Ranges, you got a sore leg.
I've got a cramp.
Don't worry. I'd normally say Robert would massage it for you, but given that where I see the cramp is, no one's going to massage that for you.
I don't think so.
He'll be doing it for work discrimination. See,
yeah.
Just a sec. So in the period 2021 to 2022, and now stop laughing because these are serious issues. Yep. The big issues were family violence intervention orders,
yep.
parenting arrangements, and family violence. So.
It's all based around violence, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I would say that for our office, they would not be the three top things that come to us.
Wouldn't they?
No, not the top three. Well, understand that a community legal service is for people who generally they're not, you know, they need help and they may not have the resources. We're a private law firm.
Yeah.
So it's not that we're not touching on those things. Heaps of times we would touch on these issues. Yeah. But they wouldn't be... People come to us because they're wanting to buy or sell a house. That's not going to happen in a community legal service because if you can afford a house, you should be able to afford a lawyer to do the conveyancing for you. So there are those things that... So we would be helping people with wills and estates, with those things that might be important, or victims of crime is a big thing that's dealing with people that are victims of crime. And I imagine sometimes these centres, because they know that the private sector is happy to pick it up, they want to cover areas that maybe the private sector can't pick up.
Or the person that can't afford the proper legal.
And really you don't need to be able to afford, for a victim of crime, that's something that's covered by the state. So that's fine. So there would be different things. Personal injuries, you've got your people who just in normal commerce need a debt collected or need to defend from a malicious claim against them. So...
Yeah.
And also these days, unfortunately, insolvency is increasing, so bankruptcy and liquidations are increasing. So you may have been paid something by a company and the liquidator comes along and says, hey, pay that back to me.
That's happened too, hasn't it?
There are very precise rules around around how that operates, and so we're backed up for both liquidators and for people defending themselves against liquidators. So the trickiest one is where... and the really sad one, I think Con came and spoke to you about, where there's, in a previous program, where an individual might borrow money to pay a debt that's owed by the company to the tax office, and then the tax office pays it back to the liquidator because at the time it was known that the company was not able to pay its debts. And then the tax office goes back to the person who individually borrowed to cover the tax debts and says, well, you've got to pay it again to us now. So it's a double whammy. So you really need to be careful stepping into those. Anyway, so we would cover a broader range of issues, but these, I think it's just worth noting that it's great that the Eastern Community Legal Service Centre exists, and on their stats, family violence intervention orders, very serious things, and family violence are both things where the courts get involved because... people are just acting irresponsibly, irrationally, and inappropriately. Not inappropriate, I think, is too mild a word. There's criminal acts that are taking place.
And it's been COVID has made it worse, didn't they? Because very often people were locked up in their homes with people that had the potential to do them harm, and they have done it.
Absolutely. So I think it creates a pressure cooker. And already there's tensions, and I think those tensions are exacerbated, or you know, they are magnified by being in a close proximity without the normal outlets to where they might be able to tolerate each other within boundaries, and then suddenly they're thrown together in a very closed environment. Of course, people, I think there was a huge uptake in family law and related issues, and hopefully that's plateaued and might even drop off, because it's almost like your relationship's been stress tested.
Yep.
And so we may see a drop off, you know, in the next, it'll still take 2 or 3 years to deal with the work that's come in.
Yep.
Let alone, but it might be that there might be some some relief in that area.
And of course, let's be honest, during a normal year, you both go off to work, or one goes off to work, and very often gets people out of and they meet with other people, and all of a sudden you're with each other 24 hours a day. It doesn't excuse it in any way, but it seems to have exacerbated a lot of situations, doesn't it?
Yeah, not to go back to Robert's comments before about the issues around, you know, how can you regulate your own body and maintain your own health and fitness so that hopefully you're not taking out on others things that you shouldn't be taking out on them in any event. But the government at one stage, remember, you couldn't even leave home. You weren't allowed more than 5 kilometres away, and exercise was only...
And there had to be a real reason to do the 5Ks.
Yeah. I don't want to go back to those memories. That was pretty scary. That's
and one day we're going to look back and say that's not possible. We were never stuck that close to home.
You're still running the spot, though.
Yeah, there you go. You run on the spot. I think the good thing is, let's think, the next program is going to be spring.
Yep.
And we know that in spring, a young man's thoughts turn to love, and we'll be thinking positive thoughts.
I told you, we're not going to talk stuff like that.
Oh, well, we've got Robert. He's a young man, unlike us.
Guys, look, it's terrific to have you along. We always love to have Hutchison Legal in every second Wednesday of the month between 12 and 1. Again, if you've got any questions, too late for today, but either ring Greg 59-615-991 the next hour, and we will put them to the legal team this time next month, or send us an email at info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Guys, I've got to go. The news is right on the tapping on the door, so...
Thanks
very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And have a good day. Wherever you're going to go.